Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Janie Lee Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quit lit authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome. It's Janie Lee Grace, and I hope you're well. It's been a momentous week, hasn't it, really? After the death of Caroline Flack, which, of course, the news came out on Saturday after I'd recorded the podcast on Friday last week. I don't know about you, but my every bit of social media I've looked at has been kind of full of awareness around mental health and anxiety and depression. It's really kick-started something. And I suppose that all you can really say is that if anything, any hope can come from such a tragedy, you know, it might be that as a nation, we become kinder. That's been the mantra, hasn't it, across a lot of stuff on Facebook and various other social media sites. People are talking about kindness and you know, above all, if you can choose to be anything, but choose to be kind. You know, it's the one thing that we can all do. It's accessible to all of us. It's free. And the other thing that I've noticed, I'm sure you have too, is the amount of challenges and posts around the idea of looking out for other people. You know, and when friends cancel you and say, "Oh, I'm just not. I can't make it." Sometimes we need to question. Maybe it is more than just they can't make it. Maybe actually we need to check on them. Check up on whether they really are okay. It's really got me thinking. It's such a fine line, isn't it, between taking care of someone and finding out that they're okay and interfering. And I didn't know Caroline, never actually met her. But I did have a friend, a close friend, who committed suicide. It must have been 10 years ago now. And I remember at the time just feeling just a tremendous sense of, in addition to the absolute shock, of course, and trauma and grief, a sense of shame and guilt that maybe I should have known or could have done more. So I don't know why I mentioned that, but I think this is on lots of people's minds at the moment, and I think it's really interesting the way the good that can come from stuff like this is the more people talk about becoming aware of our feelings and facing, facing stuff that's going on rather than just disappearing, I think is really important. We've been doing a lot this week in the Sober Club. We've been looking at talking about kind of how layers appear when you ditch the booze. Of course, you suddenly have to face what's going on. And of course, stopping drinking doesn't fix you. Sadly, it doesn't mean that you're instantly everything's fine in your life. In fact, it obviously it exposes what is there that you'd probably been previously numbing out. But it doesn't fix you. So you do have to look at stuff where in the past you would have just numbed it out with alcohol. You have to look at it, which can feel terrifying. But the good news is you become more resilient and find, hopefully, with the right support, you can start to find coping strategies and different ways to be able to look at that. I suppose it's all emotional maturity, isn't it? And of course, many of us, we've said before on the podcast, many of us didn't really have very much emotional maturity, particularly if you start drinking from a really young age. All of the kind of big stuff that's happened to you over your life, all of the, you know, every time you were angry, every time you were fearful, you know, everything was sort of under the haze of alcohol because we just numbed so much stuff out. So when you do have to face it, it's a big deal, and it takes quite a long time, you know, to make those changes, to go through that recovery. Our guest last week on the podcast, Rachel Welford, she gave this lovely quote. I haven't got it in front of me, but it's about the fact that we all need to learn to to sit with our emotions. We need to know how to handle negative emotions. She was talking about even young children, how parents can help young children rather than just sort of banishing them to the naughty step when they've had a tantrum. Actually talk to them and find out, well, where did that feeling come from? You know, that feeling of anger, let's talk about it. And yeah, I mean, this stuff, there's no doubt about it, should be taught in schools, shouldn't it? We should be talking about dealing with our emotions, about how we can take ourselves out of that fight or flight mode, you know, and just become much more aware of our emotional well-being. So I guess actually there was one lovely quote that I'm sure you saw on social media as well, which was, be kind to past versions of yourself that didn't know the things you know now. I think that was originated from Yogismood, at Yogismood. I think that was the hashtag to credit it. And I thought that really was very special, you know, because it's so true. We didn't know what we didn't know. We couldn't act differently. But we know it now. And so we can forgive and be kind to ourselves and others, of course. You know, our family of origin didn't necessarily know what we know now. On that note, I'm really thrilled to tell you that I have Julie Toms, family constellations therapist, is going to be joining me on the podcast talking about some of this stuff and how our family of origin affects who we are and really impacts on us moving forward in our lives, the whole issue of epigenetics, really. So looking forward to that podcast. And today, a guest, again, very pertinent, really, to all of this. It was recorded before Carolyn Flack's death, just in case you're wondering why we didn't reference it. It was I recorded this a few weeks ago, and it's with mindset coach Fiona Drake. And she's a fascinating woman. She has a wealth of experience. She's had her own kind of big story. She now does workshops on positive mindset and abundance. She talks about manifesting and law of attraction, and she's a licensed workshop leader in the philosophies of Louise Hay, someone I talk about a lot, of course. Louise Hay from Hay House Publishing. Louise was really the sort of grandmother of self-love, really, self-help pioneer. So Fiona has some amazing experiences to share. So we'll bring that interview very soon. Just a reminder too, that I'm going to be speaking as part of the Live Well event, which is at Bishopsgate in London next Saturday afternoon. It's 1:45 in the kind of kitchen area, I think it is. It's a panel which talks all about how to stay connected and social when you're not drinking. And I'm going to be on that panel with Laura from Club Soda and Scott, the boy who drank too much. I think Stephanie Chivers is with us. Millie, I think, from Sober Girl Society. So a whole bunch of us kind of sharing our insights into how you stay social and connected when you're not drinking. So sounds like an amazing festival. If you go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, you can see the information about that. And while you're on that page, check out the retreats that I have on offer. There's a wellbeing break coming up at Champneys in June, and then our Sobriety Rocks retreat still has some places. I would so love some Sober Club members to come on that. I'm still getting some lovely messages from people who came a couple of weeks ago. It's very transformative, because it doesn't matter what stage you're at. It doesn't matter whether you've always been teetotal, whether you're sober curious, whether you've stopped drinking a few months ago, a few weeks ago. It doesn't matter. It's really so much about living your best life without the booze. And we do yoga and meditation, cacao ceremony. There's yoga nidra, which is relaxation. And there's incredible gourmet vegan food in a beautiful, beautiful setting. So check that out. It's Sobriety Rocks Retreat. And it's the 31st of July to the 2nd of August. So you find that if you go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, and you'll find that there. A few spaces left on that. And the date for your diary is July the 11th, Saturday, July the 11th in central London. I'm going to be hosting a little workshop and a meetup. Be great to meet some podcast listeners on that. And also an ask. This is a big ask from me. I would love some testimonials from the for the podcast. So if you enjoy listening to the podcast, I would so appreciate it if you'd be willing to take some time just to, it will only take you a couple of minutes, just go to wherever you listen to your podcast. If you listen on Apple or Spotify or whatever, whatever platform, and just click on the podcast and just leave me a nice review. It would just make so much difference. The podcasts that have reviews, good reviews, obviously, get shared and get picked up. And I just love to bring this stuff to a wider audience, because I'm really lucky to have such fantastic guests like this one. So enjoy the interview. It's Fiona Drake. Welcome, Fiona.
Hi there, Janie.
It's so lovely to speak to you. And I loved reading your biog and some of the info that you sent me, because we've been kind of connected on social media and various ways for ages. But it was lovely to read the way you describe some of your work, and you work with the law of attraction and mindfulness and meditation and affirmations and visualization and positive mindset, and just all of the above are absolutely amazing topics for us here on this podcast, because it's the kind of things that I've been steeped in for years, but it's only in the last couple of years that I've fully been able to understand what these things mean for me. Because as people on the podcast will have heard me say loads of times, although I've been talking about this stuff, it didn't mean anything to me personally, because I had this kind of poison that was pouring on my head the whole time. Anyways, we'll get to all of that and the work that you do, but just tell us a little bit about you. What's your kind of backstory? What's brought you to where you are now?
Yeah, it's a fascinating one, really, and been an amazing and incredible journey, and one I wouldn't actually change. I came from the corporate world. I worked as a sales and marketing director in a manufacturing facility for quite a long time, and I'd always worked in sort of senior leadership roles. And I think for me, towards the back end of that, the latter end of that, I started to be a sort of stereotypical stressed out executive, working long hours and doing exceedingly well and succeeding and achieving, but ultimately at what cost? So friends and family not seeing them, not socializing, maybe sleeping at the weekend because I was so exhausted. So absolutely love what I did, but I'd actually lost sight of perspective. So I actually at one stage realized just how much I was almost married to the job. I was sort of giving too much, and it was my own responsibility. I never put anything back on any of the businesses or anybody that I worked for. Ultimately, it was my responsibility. And I think that is another thing that I've really taken away, is that we are responsible for our own lives. And I was responsible. I was the one cracking my own whip.
And so, our own happiness, actually. We often forget that, don't we? You know, people who feel they're miserable, we have to realise to a greater or lesser extent, we can take control of our own happiness. But anyway, carry on.
And that is exactly what I did, because I realized that I was actually letting something else disempower me and not take control. So I decided, I actually had a bit of an epiphany. It was one evening, I actually had a panic attack, and I didn't realize, and it was actually coming out in me. And if I wasn't going to stop, then my body was actually going to stop me. And so from there, I started to make some changes. And I started to leave the business earlier. I started to get involved in meditation and mindfulness. And that's really, I suppose, where the journey started, my self-development journey, learning about what else there is out there, what I can fill my time with that is nourishing and helpful. And so that's where this whole journey came from. So I had this wonderful career, and I would never change it for a few decades in the corporate world, but realized at the age of 45 that was something different, something better, something more out there for me. And here I was at 45 and took the leap away from the pension, the company car, the nice salary, the title, the everything else, because I realized that if I'd gone through this particular journey, there were actually women out there similar to me in the corporate world that I could go and then help. And so realizing that there are different and better ways of doing things, I wanted to bring that into the more of the public domain and start sharing this wisdom, sharing what I knew about the law of attraction and about mindfulness and meditation and how it can really help elevate us and bring some perspective and clarity to our lives. So it's really the last 2 years of my life have really changed for me dramatically.
And where does drinking fit in with this? Because obviously there'll be many people listening are in that corporate world where the kind of pressure on you to drink is ridiculous, either within the workplace or because of the stress that you're feeling once you get in the door. You know, I've spoken to so many people who feel they're on this treadmill of just the alcohol feels like your reward. So how is that for you? And have you found that you know, maybe with people you've spoken to as well, that once they're able to get a bit of freedom from that, they can see more clearly what it is they actually want for their career?
Oh, completely. I mean, for me, I, on a Friday night, would sort of zip home at the end of a busy week and open a bottle of wine because it was just something to allow me to relax and just, it was almost like it marked the end of the week for me. So that was what it was. But yes, I can imagine in the corporate world, if you worked more in the city, or you can imagine the pressure to entertain and to have time with your colleagues outside of work. Yeah, I can totally understand that. So I think what happened when I started to learn more about meditation and mindfulness, I realized then that actually that bottle of wine wasn't necessarily serving me in the pursuit of where I was going, because for me, the meditation, the mindfulness really helped me have a lot of clarity. It really helped bring calm to my life. And we could have a whole podcast on the benefits of meditation and mindfulness. But ultimately, for me, if I was topping myself up with good things, nourishing things, self-development, then really what part then did the bottle of wine play?
Yeah. So, it's interesting. You know, I think the two things can be very linked. And I've said many times that for me, although I've been steeped in this world and talking about it a lot and interviewing everyone there is, every Hay House author, you know, and always known the importance of and the benefits of meditation, for me, I just did not feel I could do it. You know, it was yet another thing that I felt that I was kind of not successful at, and I was beating myself up about not being able to do it. And you must have come across many people like that. I mean, I now, as I've said many times on the podcast, I still don't think I can do it, but I now feel differently about it. So now I show up anyway. But what's your take on all of that? This kind of pressure we put on ourselves to get meditation right, and then we beat ourselves up because we allegedly are not doing it how we think it should be done.
Absolutely. And I think there's two things there. The first thing is who dictates what's right or wrong? Ultimately, if you can rest for 5 minutes, close your eyes and have 5 to 10 minutes to yourself, then that for me is so much, has so much, many more benefits as well. So you don't necessarily have to do it right, whatever do it right means. So I think getting that time aside for reflection, for journaling, whatever it might be, whatever quiet time, then that's fine. The other thing is that mindfulness and meditation doesn't have to come in the form of sitting cross-legged in a quiet room. You can do it lifting weights, you can do it walking the dog, you can do it getting out in nature. So whatever mindfulness and meditation is for you, that works for you, that allows you to be present and see things around you and feel and use all of your senses, that for me you have to find what works for us, don't we?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I love that. I mean, what is the difference between meditation then and mindfulness? I mean, we know, you know, mindfulness is a bit of a buzzword now, isn't it? I think we're all aware that is focusing on the present. So if you're washing the dishes, rather than planning your trip in your head to wherever you're going next, you're actually washing the dishes, focusing on the soapy suds or whatever it is. So if that's mindfulness, what is meditation then?
Yeah, so as you say, mindfulness is really coming back to the present and living right in the moment. But for me, meditation can be deeper. What I like to talk about, and again, coming back to really the topic that we're focusing on, which is like clarity of mind and things like that, that's where I think meditation can really help. Because when we quieten the mind, what we find is whispers of wisdom and insight come up, whereas maybe normally they wouldn't, because we've got this monkey mind jumping back into. So meditation for me allows us to go within. It allows us to really connect with our inner selves, that intuition, and those whispers that often we're just too busy or there's too much noise to hear. So that for me is the difference between, that's a personal view of between meditation and mindfulness.
So of course there are sort of guided meditations that some people find really helpful. I found I was able to focus on those because it focused my mind, so I was able to listen to the voice and go on that little meditative journey, if you like, and that had a real value. Certainly back in the day when I tried to sit to meditate, it really was just a shopping list. It was just a shopping list. And then a kind of, when I brought myself back to the moment, it was just telling myself off for having written another shopping list. So then at the end of the period of time I'd set, I would sort of get up and feel massively frustrated. I just, oh my goodness, I've just sat there planning a shopping list. I could have been hoovering while I did that. I'm guessing there's other people who feel like me. I'm sure I'm not the only one. So how do you help people who have that absolute chatter the whole goddamn time?
It's about bringing yourself back to the breath, ultimately. And the breath is the anchor that focuses us. So really, we can count the breaths, because our mind naturally wants to think. I think they say it's something like 70,000 thoughts a day that we have.
If not 90,000, actually, yeah. and many of them are the same, by the way.
Yeah. And many of them, And so the reality is our mind wants to think. So, you know, imagine yourself as a mountain and imagine those little thoughts coming past as little clouds. Don't hold on to them. Don't create a story around them, but acknowledge that the thought has come and let it pass, and then focus back on the breath. And then that breath, you are constantly then being aware. You're constantly living in the moment because you are coming back to the breath. And it's such a great way to manage that busy mind that wants to write the shopping list or plan for tea or what the kids need the next day, whatever it is. So yeah, it's just bringing yourself back to the breath. And just like anything, the more we do it, the easier that it gets.
Yeah, definitely. And also I think, you know, as I've just alluded to there, that kind of the inner critic in me was telling me that, you know, I'm rubbish at this and what's the point in bothering? And I guess part of this whole conversation is about learning to recognize that inner critic and recognize that voice that tells us we're not enough and we're bad at this and we're bad at that. And just learning to accept ourselves. It's a very big part of your work and the stuff that I talk about all the time. So tell us a bit more about that then, where the self-love and the self-acceptance comes in and how we can make a start on that for those of us who you know, find that really, really tricky.
Yeah, definitely. As well as the after I left the corporate world, I started to do more work with Louise Hay's teachings and philosophies. So I'm a licensed workshop leader and I absolutely adore her work. And as you know, she was one of the first self-help pioneers out there. Now, Louise Hay, and if you look into her work, she talks straight away about self-love. It all is about self-love and dealing with the inner child and the inner critic and how we talk to ourselves and that inner chatter that we have. The biggest thing for me is awareness, because we run on autopilot all of the time. And those kind of messages, I'm late, I'm not good enough, I've got a million emails, I've got 1,000 things to do, everybody wants a piece of me. These are the affirmations every day that are going around people's minds. So if we can actually bring awareness to our thoughts and consciously change them to what we want them to be, that is the biggest cheat sheet I can give you. is awareness of the thoughts. And when I start to have conversations with my clients, when I've had a breakthrough session with them, for example, and the affirmations that are coming out, because every thought we think is an affirmation and every statement that we make is an affirmation. So if those affirmations are, I'm not good at this, I'm not prepared enough, I don't have enough money, I'm not good enough, those kind of things are what you're putting out into your subconscious, but also into the ether. Yeah. And if we believe in the law of attraction, that's what we're going to be getting back. So the first thing I do is work with clients to up-level their speech and the things that we're saying. And so that at first might be clunky because affirmations are short, succinct statements of how we wish life to be, situations to be, ourselves to be. And so sometimes from where we are to where we want to be can be quite a gap. And so to say, I am worthy, I love myself, these kind of things can be such a gap for people. And so
because the subconscious mind, it kind of immediately comes in and says, well, no, you're not, you don't. There's no point in looking in the mirror and saying I love myself when the very next thought is no, you don't.
That is exactly right. And again, what we're doing here is we're creating new neural pathways and we're creating new patterning. So if the default is I'm not good enough and I don't like looking at myself in the mirror, then of course what we've got to do is start retraining the brain to start believing that you can do those things. Mm-hmm. And that takes practice. And a tip I can give people is if, you know, saying the words I am worthy, which is a short, succinct statement, that might just be too far for people. So what you can do is then saying, I'm willing to believe I am worthy. So you're almost bridging the gap without it feeling too clunky and disingenuous that I don't feel like that, I'm lying.
Yeah.
And so what happens then is you're giving your subconscious mixed messages because you're saying one thing, but you're feeling something else.
Yeah, totally.
So actually by making it more gentle and more realistic, you are actually bridging the gap, but you're doing something really positive.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's no doubt about it that, you know, as you're talking, I'm sort of thinking to myself, you know, there's going to be a lot of people listening to this who, I mean, this is new. This stuff is really brand new to them because they've been numbing everything for years. Everything has been numbed with alcohol, you know, just pour some more wine on your head kind of thing. And the feelings will go away. But then of course, as we all know, alcohol is a depressant and all, you know, we go back to it because we think it makes us more confident and have fun and all the rest of it. But then the anxiety kicks in and you're into a vicious cycle. But I'm not even sure what my question is. I suppose my question is what's your thinking around the link between alcohol and this lack of self-love, because for me it was huge. The link was absolutely huge.
I think we're all looking for something, aren't we? And there can be a huge amount in our subconscious that we're not even aware of. So we might have trauma that we didn't even think was a trauma.
Absolutely. And we're numbing it, we're using the alcohol to numb it.
And it is a sticking plaster ultimately, isn't it? And so by doing that, you're on shaky ground, because ultimately deep down there might be a belief, a limiting belief, some form of self-sabotage, some inner critic that has come about through some form of trauma or incident that has happened that's never been dealt with. And so when you start to clear the path and then have that clarity of thought, you then can make way for processing some of that trauma and realizing why you behave in a certain way or what your commands are and why there are certain controls in your life that happen. And so when you clear that path, you can actually then do the work on your inner self to clear the way for even more potential.
That's
an opportunity. I cannot express the work that I am starting to do with trauma is unbelievable, because we can have these inner blockages we don't even know are there. But we say these commands: I'm not good enough, love is a battle, life is tough, life isn't fair. And if those are the commands that you're constantly pushing out, then that is what is in your
that's what you're attracting. Yeah, absolutely. It's so true. You're absolutely right. And the amazing thing is that, you know, when you ditch the booze, you raise your vibration. There's no doubt about it. Alcohol lowers your vibration. If anyone had said that to me years ago, I just wouldn't have believed them. But it's so true. And when you've ditched the booze, it doesn't mean that you know, the trauma may still be in your past, of course. And your life may not be perfect, but you do get a different kind of, as you say, clarity. That's exactly it. To be able to start to realize your potential and to build a resilience. You know, it's amazing, actually, in my sober club, it's just been just so beautiful to see people grow. You know, they can be the sort of opening, the first few weeks, and they're in some kind of agony, and they're really grumpy and they're really irritable, exactly how I was when I first ditched the booze. And then a few months in, you start to see this new person emerge. It's amazing stuff. Tell me more about when you talk about the, you know, attract what you attract, as you say, by the words you use. And when we think about this phrase, the law of attraction or manifestation, what does it really mean? Because many of us have heard this phrase and then we hear it ridiculed, and then we hear somebody saying, oh yeah, cosmic ordering, oh, that's just so woo-woo. I'll have 3 Porsches and a holiday, please. You know, it comes in for a bad rap, doesn't it? So what do you mean by it in its very tangible sense that we can all benefit from?
One of the biggest things that is illuminating when I talk about the law of attraction is, I love the book, The Secret, but don't get me wrong. When we think about The Secret, we think of 3 words, which is ask, believe, receive. Mm. And people ask for the Lamborghini.
Yeah.
They start to believe it's going to come, and then it doesn't come, you know, and you can't just sit on a couch waiting for that. You have to have then a blend of feeling, and it comes down to emotion, because as you alluded to before, your vibration. Yeah. So if you don't feel it, you're not going to put in out the energetic vibration that is what you're wanting to call in. And the other thing we have to do is take action.
Yes.
So if we want to get that Lamborghini, and I just use something material like that, it could be anything, we have to go to the dealership. We have to have a, you know, go and take a picture of ourselves in it. Mm. Find a mate who's got a Lamborghini and go and borrow it for the weekend. You have to get your steps nearer to it. So it is about like attracting like, but it's about all things being in alignment. And for me, it's ask, believe, feel, take action, receive. Mm. So there's actually a few steps. And another key part of it is allowing and surrendering and allowing the universe to bring in something even better for you than you might have imagined. So you might have one vision in sight and be so focused on that what you don't do is allow enough space for something even better to come in for you.
Yeah.
So for me, it's ultimately like attracts like. What you put out, you get back. It's as simple as that. So if you think that maybe you're on your own journey to sobriety and you think, actually, this is what I want, but it's going to be really tricky. If that's the message that you're telling yourself, that is what you're going to experience. Mm-hmm. But if you can start to up level your approach to it, that I'm open to see what possibilities there are.
Yeah.
I'm willing to believe I can do this. Yeah. I'm willing to believe that this is easy. Mm-hmm. And so I did this with shedding weight. I do it when I'm going to the gym. You can apply all of these things. This positive mental attitude. It can be as simple as phrasing the law of attraction as positive mental attitude, if you like.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, being open. You know, I'm open to the possibility. I love that, because you are absolutely right. The more we tell ourselves something is going to be difficult or impossible or miserable, then so it will be. You know, you're absolutely right. I love that. I love that. That's a great way of doing it. Just allowing yourself to be curious as to what might come. Rather than trying to block it off. But we do have to really notice, don't we? We have to really notice our thoughts. I mean, even now, you know, I'm a few years in, and even now, I do find myself sometimes just immediately going to the negative, not around sobriety, but other areas of my life where, you know, I haven't quite reminded my inner toddler. You know, my inner toddler still has a tantrum every now and then. And so if I remember to stop, I can then go, oh, hold on a minute. That's a load of real negative crap you've just come out with there. Is it actually true? Because I guess that's what we need to do, isn't it? Is to look at, is what we've actually just been thinking about and putting out there, is it actually true? And of course, some of this can stem back from childhood, I suppose, when we're told we're crap at maths, or don't speak in public, you've got a crap voice, don't sing, or whatever we were told. No idea if there's a question in there, but yeah, do with it what you will.
It is true. And one of a little tip I can give you is whenever I notice I'm having a negative thought or something pops up, I'll just say the words cancel, 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 delete.
Okay, good.
Cancel like it that. In my subconscious.
Yeah, good idea.
Universe. And so what I'm doing there, I'm marking that and I'm saying, no, I'm not holding on to that thought and I'm going to replace it with something better. So this becomes conscious. So we have to do it consciously to start with. But again, the more we do it, the easier it gets.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can introduce affirmations into our life every single day. Every morning we wake up, you can have your raft of 5 or 6 really key affirmations that resonate with you.
Yeah.
Surrounding your journey or what it is you want to achieve.
Yeah.
Affirmations are, I believe for me, they are so powerful. They've been transformational in my life.
Do you think it's important to write them down? Or
I do.
You do? Okay.
I do, because I believe when you write things down,
It helps the cognitive brain, doesn't it?
Subconscious more. You are writing it down, you're physically writing it. And I would say, actually write them down every day because that is going to really improve your trajectory to where you want to go and to the point where you start really believing those statements that you're saying.
Yeah Love it. So one thing that I talk about a lot, and I'm sure you this is involved in the work you do, is I try and encourage people to do vision boards, and I don't think it has to always just be on the 1st of January. You can do it anytime, can't you? And you can also do a vision board for any project. You could do a vision board just around your choosing to get sober, you know, or whatever. So how do you sort of suggest people work with is it, I'm guessing it's a tool that you like?
I love vision boards because, again, there's a few things with vision boards. Get yourself into a great position when you're doing the vision board. Stick some great music on that gets you on a high vibration, that gets you in a good mood,
that's a good idea. I always tell people to turn their phone off and not have distractions, but putting music on is a great idea.
Because what we're doing is we're getting excited, because what you're doing is you're building your vision, aren't you? So what you embody while you're doing it is you're creating that vision board at a point of high vibration. And so you're kind of imbibing it. You're putting your vibe into it right at that moment. And so when you're doing it, you might get the tingles in the back of your neck. So put some great music on, get excited, start visualizing what you want to bring in. And you can do a vision board for your journey. You can do a vision board that has different elements on. So it might be love and relationships, might be home, might be career, might be finances, might be health and fitness, whatever it is. Or you might want to do just one board for each of those areas.
Yeah.
And put it somewhere you can see it every single day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
That's the important thing. I remember when I wanted to shed my weight, I shed 4 stone. And
Wow.
Yeah. So when I was stressed out executive, I was sort of, eating at the wrong times and this kind of thing. And for me, putting my vision of how I wanted to be physically, and I used really strong words, the foods I wanted to eat, really positive images. And I had it in my lounge. So every time I sat on the couch, it was there as a reminder, subconsciously. And every time I got up and walked to the kitchen, I would see it. Another thing I do is I put things on my phone. I'll put a screensaver on my phone with my favorite affirmation. I'll pop post-it notes on my dashboard. So all of these things subliminally are building up and creating much more positivity, because our brains are malleable. That's what we know now. Neuroplasticity. Yeah. We are not wired one way. We can adjust and modify our thoughts.
I love it.
The more we see them, the more we'll start to build deeper grooves that are creating more thoughts that are helpful.
Just one last question then, kind of on that. What about if someone is thinking to themselves, well, that's all very well, for you guys, but I don't know what I want. I really just don't know what I want.
I sometimes work with clients who know they may want to move from one career, but don't know what they want to do. And so what I would invite your listeners to have a think about is, what are the conditions that they want?
Yeah.
How do they want to feel?
Yeah, definitely.
Who do they want to spend time with? What are their values? What is important to them? And then from there, what you're doing is you're creating a feeling, you're creating a sense rather than, and you're again opening up the gaps for those kind of things to come in that will help you feel a certain way. Mm. So be open and be playful.
Yeah.
And you know, an affirmation could be, I'm open to all possibility. I'm open to see where the universe takes me.
Yeah.
So you can create an affirmation for anything. And we don't need to know the journey that we're on. We don't need to know the destination necessarily. But if we know how we want to feel and what we'd like to experience, and we can start to build on those kind of feelings. Mm. I think that's a really lovely way of doing it, because
yeah,
all of this work is all based on feelings.
Totally. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. And in my Get the Buzz Without the Booze course, that's where we start, is how do you want to feel? What's the why? Why are you doing this? How do you want to feel? There's no point in doing it in ditching the booze for logical reasons. I mean, we all know that alcohol's bad for us. And we all know that it's linked to 200 different illnesses, but that's not going to make you stop drinking. It's only going to be because you've caught sight of how you want to feel and you want to feel differently.
Why?
So
really,
you're absolutely important. Right.
Mm. Why is really important. And I do a lot of work with clients on the why, and why they're getting up and every day when they're having a challenging time in business. Mm. It's about really having that personal why that resonates with you. So, because when on the days it's really, really tough, you can bring yourself back to the reason why you're doing it.
Yeah,
and I love the fact that that's almost like gate one.
Yeah,
for your guys, because it's really key to identify that.
Mm. Excellent. Well, we could chat for hours, couldn't we? Tell us where we can find you, and just tell us a little bit about how you work with people. I'm guessing you do coaching, but also workshops, and just tell us about your work and how we can find you.
Lovely, thank you. Yes, I do one-to-one coaching with female, predominantly business owners and entrepreneurs. I offer a number of different ways to work on a one-to-one basis. And I also do lots of workshops, so workshops on the law of attraction, manifestation, mindset, and I do quite a lot of public speaking. So yeah, lovely, varied career that I have managed to manifest for myself.
Yeah, absolutely. After the corporate gig. Fantastic. And just remind us of your website.
So fionadrake.com, and I can be found on LinkedIn as Fiona Drake, and I can be found on Instagram as Fiona_Drake_coaching.
Got it. Fiona, thank you so much for your time. I love it. It's just so inspiring, and I think it's going to really, really inspire people to, go after what they want. You may not have heard me say it. I've said it lots of times, a fabulous phrase. Alcohol steals your joy. It really steals your joy, and being sober makes you brave, so you can go after all this stuff that you want. So thank you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So if anyone is really keen to do more around self-love, don't forget, in the Sober Club, we've just had our self-love challenge. And I did promise that if anyone decided to join the Sober Club, then I'll tag you in to that challenge if you decide to join during February. So check it out. All the info's there. And there's a free PDF, self-care and sobriety. And we've got another one on reasons to an alcohol-free challenge. There's a bunch of blog posts there. You don't have to pay to read any of those, obviously, and there's some competitions and a bunch of stuff at soberclub.com, and of course those events that I mentioned before, the retreats and the link to the Live Well Festival, where I'm speaking with Laura from Club Soda next Saturday. Whatever it is you're doing, have yourself a fantastic week. My self-care tip would be to go and get some kind of body work done. Think about the somatic for once, because I mean, I'm really guilty of this. I spend so much time, you know, in my head, and I'm banging on to other people the whole time about journaling and trying to think about meditation. And I do things like walks in nature, but I forget to the experience of touch is also so important. And I had a real raging headache last week. So unusual for me. I never get headaches. And I had a bit of a cold and then I had this headache. And then I suddenly realized, actually, I had this pain across the back of my neck, probably from sitting at computers in a really bad position. Note to self, sit in a proper chair, sit up straight, stop it. So I realized, hold on a minute, it's ages since I've had any kind of body work or massage or anything like that, and in years actually, which is utterly ridiculous. So I was able to find a Bowen therapist. It's Bowen, by the way. Something I spoke about in my books that I've written. I've been writing about the Bowen technique for years. It's a truly transformative, amazing therapeutic technique. If you find a good practitioner, totally non-invasive, done fully clothed, incredibly relaxing. And it was absolutely amazing. An hour of that. And I mean, the pain hasn't completely gone from my shoulder. I might need one more treatment, but it's so much better. It's like 80% better, which is really cool. So that would be my tip, is try and get yourself some kind of body work, or give yourself a massage, or ask a friend. And at the very, very least, if you are listening to this and you are conscious of your drinking, or you are not drinking, or you are sober, or you're sober curious, then at the very least, give yourself a really big hug. And I'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast with Jamie Lee Grace. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us, share on social media, and tune in again.